From State College to Irwin, Jersey Shore to Beaver Falls, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the 2024 Republican National Convention is set to get underway in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas joins us to discuss results of the Lincoln Institute's 2024 Republican Delegate and Alternate Delegate Survey. Pittsburgh Regional Transit is losing both riders and money. We learn more from Eric Montardi and Scott Cross on this week's Allegheny Institute Report. And the free speech of Pennsylvanians will now be protected as legislative Republicans and Democrats have come together to pass legislation curbing lawsuits aimed at suppressing public participation in policy discussions. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania's 2024-25 state budget deadline passed 2 weeks ago, and still there is no fiscal plan in place. Lawmakers have been at the Capitol most of the past week, but only a few in leadership positions actually negotiate the specifics of the budget. House GOP Appropriations Chairman Seth Grove is placing the blame for the delay on Democrats who hold a majority in the chamber. Governor Josh Shapiro has also come under criticism for failing to engage in the budget process earlier and more effectively. Last year, Shapiro reneged on a budget deal with Senate Republicans. That resulted in a standoff that was not fully resolved until December. Your personal vehicles are going to be sporting a new look as a new Pennsylvania license plate design was unveiled this past week. A Liberty Bell sits prominently in the middle of a white background with the slogan, "Let Freedom Ring," at the bottom of the new plates. The redesign is part of Governor Josh Shapiro's tourism marketing plan, rebranded as the Great American Getaway. The license plate design is also appearing on signage along major roadways, welcoming motorists to the Keystone State. All of this is also a nod to the upcoming 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. The presidential election has been dominating the news in recent weeks. Voter registration data from the Pennsylvania Department of State is showing the number of registered independents is growing, while the number of registered Democrats is stagnant. The number of registered independents has risen by 5.2% since the beginning of the year, as more than 50,000 voters have opted to not select a party. Democrats have gained only 1,300 new registrants, while the Republican Party gained almost 60,000 new voters. Democrats once held more than a million voter registration lead over Republicans. As of today, that margin now down to 372,000. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Republicans are gathering in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for the 2024 Republican National Convention, which will officially nominate Donald J. Trump for president. The Lincoln Institute has conducted a survey of Pennsylvania delegates and alternate delegates to the convention, asking a wide range of questions on state and national issues. To discuss the results, we are joined by veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal.
Good to be with you again, Loman. I'm looking forward to dissecting this survey you've done of Republican delegates to their national convention, which I know you've done for four or five cycles now.
Yeah, I think the first one we did was back in 1996, if I recall.
Bob Dole.
We've done this quadrennially. And it's always interesting, Chris, because needless to say, whenever you survey delegates to the national convention, many of the questions that you would ask in a general public opinion survey, you don't want to really ask because they're the most diehard members of each party. So you pretty much know what the answer is going to be. But we did have a couple of interesting things that this survey turned up. And of course, the Republican National Convention, now about to get underway in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, We are, by the way, recording this on Wednesday, and I'm sure most of the folks who are listening now are hearing us on Saturday or Sunday. So it's entirely possible Donald Trump may have picked his running mate by the time people hear this. But since we're recording before that, we did ask a survey question. We asked the delegates and alternates, and these are Republican delegates and alternates from only the state of Pennsylvania, who they would favor as a running mate for Donald Trump. Seems to be the biggest issue, biggest question facing the convention.
On the Republican side, Loman, you're right, it is the biggest unknown. This will be now the third successive election where Donald Trump has been the Republican nominee. So these delegates, many of whom repeat as delegates or alternate for several conventions in a row, they're obviously very familiar with that. So to me, the newsy part of your survey is that Doug Burgum, the North Dakota governor and former one-time presidential candidate earlier this year, was the number one choice of Pennsylvania Republican delegates and alternate delegates to be President Trump's running mate. He has been in office. He first won election in 2016, so his time as governor is coming to an end. He is kind of a mostly self-made cajillionaire in the computer consulting business and the IT world. And North Dakota people think of as, is that really still in the United States? And it is. And they've you know, one of the reasons we're drilling so much oil now, in addition to what we're getting here in Pennsylvania, oil and natural gas, is there's a lot of oil out in the western part of North Dakota. So he's dealt with that. And I think, not to put so many words in President Trump's mouth, but I think Trump looks at him uniquely as someone who was somewhat of a colleague, someone of an equal, again, a successful business person. And he comported himself well, Governor Burgum did, during his short time in office. I think he's most well known for having torn his Achilles tendon the night before the first GOP debate. So we had to wheel on one of those scooters and stand behind the podium speaking with his leg crooked up in that. So he did not make a big dent as a presidential candidate, but then he kind of recycled and became a friend of Trump. So he's in first place. Then there are three other folks who are all tied for second place. And that's former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, and former Trump cabinet member Ben Carson. So to go through them real quickly in reverse order, Ben Carson ran for president several times ago, ultimately did not make it, served as Health and Human Services Secretary for President Trump. J.D. Vance is the author of Hillbilly Elegy, a very well-known book, and was a fierce Trump critic until 3 or 4 years ago. And he is now in his second year as senator from the Buckeye State in Ohio. And then Nikki Haley obviously was a state representative in South Carolina, then two-term governor, ran for president in 2016, and ultimately served about 3 years as Trump's ambassador to the United Nations. And who knows what Trump will do publicly. A lot of the talk has been between Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, Governor Burgum of North Dakota, and Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio. But as in the past, Trump kind of keeps these things close to the vest.
And Donald Trump, of course, I think he would have announced this already had not the Democrat Party been gripped by the drama about whether or not Joe Biden remains as the nominee. But Donald Trump has been very smart, I think, in standing back and just letting the other side fall all over itself. And
I agree that he has been adroit at allowing the Democrats to continue with their circular firing squad. I will disagree with you. I think even if that wasn't happening, he would be maxing out the potential drama on the vice presidential pick. The convention starts Monday. Normally, the vice presidential candidate speaks on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So whoever it is going to have a whirlwind of activity. And if you're somebody like Burgum or especially Rubio, you've run before, you've been in office for a long time, J.D. Vance, not so much. But then you have to get ready to give a nationally televised address. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And be up to speed. So that person's going to have a very busy 72 hours whenever Trump. Now, as I mentioned in my newsletter to PA Political Digest about a week ago, Trump intimated that he had made up his mind but had not told that person. So we'll see whether that's just him being a showman or whether that is really how things will play out.
We are talking with Chris Nicholas, who, as he just said, is author of the Pennsylvania Political Digest newsletter, also a veteran political consultant here in Pennsylvania. And he joins us from time to time on Lincoln Radio Journal as we discuss statewide elections and politics. And we are discussing the 2024 Republican Delegate and Alternate Delegate Survey. This is a survey of delegates and alternates who will be representing Pennsylvania at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Now, we did go into a few issues here, Chris. And if you look at the issues that a majority of voters or voters for the most part are concerned about, the economy and inflation far and away leads the list. As far as our delegates are concerned, are they also suffering from the impact of inflation?
Well, according to what they said, Lohman, in the survey, yes, they are. And to me, an even more interesting question is who they blame for the nation's current economic ills. And not to be surprised, because this is, of course, a survey of Republican delegates, 100% of them said President Biden was responsible. But then almost half of them said the Federal Reserve, and a little bit more than a third said Congress, and about 16% said corporate America. So I'm not exactly sure what they mean by the Federal Reserve. Perhaps interest rates, because the Federal Reserve is a quasi-private independent entity that sets those interest rates. We can certainly understand their concerns about President Biden being involved in this, and obviously Congress as well. So to me, if the issues Republican delegates are concerned about were a stock on Wall Street, Lohman, I would describe them as being in a very narrow trading range, because you can see 100% said Biden and half said the Federal Reserve. So they're obviously clued in to what they think is the reasoning behind our economic ills. And it's interesting that every month we get these usually better than average or better than expected jobs numbers. But then what people do every day or every week in their lives kind of pushes them the other way when they go to the grocery store and groceries cost more than they did a couple weeks before. And the same thing with gasoline. And you've got people perhaps unable to move on with their lives and sell their house because the interest rates are so high they can't see how they can get the next house for their family. So again, we seem to be kind of in this pause period where we keep waiting for the world to move on finally from the pandemic and its aftermath. We're just not there yet.
We also were interested, Chris, in how the delegates viewed the job being done by the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives. Of course, the Senate controlled by Democrats, the House of Representatives by Republicans. Did you find anything interesting in those answers?
So I was not surprised that every one of the delegates who answered said they have a negative view of the job being done by the Senate, because that's led by Democrat Chuck Schumer and has been for the last 2 years. But the House of Representatives, we had more than half of the respondents, Lohman, say they have a negative view of the House of Representatives, and Republicans have controlled that for this Congress for the past year and a half, albeit by a very small and narrowing margin. So among Republicans, you had about 38% of them say they had a positive view of what was going on at the House of Representatives, but again, 52% having a negative. Now, that may have been influenced by there is that drama, you know, back in the spring about who was going to be speaker. So maybe that's where people are coming from, less about the job they're doing and more about the intrigue at the top and the limbo Republicans were in there. So I found that interesting as well, that your delegates are not just all in lockstep.
No, they are not all in lockstep. And there's a whole wide range of issues, by the way, that we did ask, a series of issues on the national level, a series of state level issues, and a very thorough survey. We've only been able to touch here briefly on part of it. So if you're listening and you're interested in seeing the entire survey, this again being a survey of the delegates and alternate delegates to this week's Republican National Convention, you can see the complete numeric results. We'll also have an analysis piece up there by Chris, and you can get that either at patownhall.com or lincolninstitute.org. patownhall.com or lincolninstitute.org. Both sites will have the complete numeric results of the survey of delegates and alternate delegates. Chris, again, you're a veteran political consultant. Tell us real quickly about the Political Digest newsletter.
So, Loman, after being in this business for 40 years, I wanted to spread my wings a little bit. I do TV every week on a show called This Week in Pennsylvania, which is on channels across the state on Sunday, but we don't have a lot of time to talk there. So I decided to start this PA Political Digest newsletter, which I do Tuesday mornings and Friday afternoons. And I offer sharp analysis of PA politics and campaigns writ large. And if you want to get a look at it, please visit papoliticaldigest.com, and there's a sign-up form there. Thanks, Loman.
And that, of course, will keep you up to date on anything and everything political happening here in Penns Woods. Chris Nicholas, veteran political consultant at Eagle Consulting. Chris, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Loman.
Pittsburgh Regional Transit faces a huge budget deficit as ridership is down, and expected grants and subsidies are not going to cover costs. To get details, we turn now to Eric Montardi and Scott Cross of the Allegheny Institute. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Scott Cross, research assistant at the Allegheny Institute. Scott, July 1st marked the beginning of the fiscal year for Pittsburgh Regional Transit, which is the mass transit provider in Allegheny County. Scott, can you give our listeners an idea of what the fiscal year 2025 budget looks like for PRT?
Absolutely. The PRT's board recently voted in May to pass a budget for this year, and that budget equals $539 million. Now, compared to last year, this is about just under a 1% increase, because last year's budget was about $535 million. So it's increasing, but by a small amount.
Okay. Can you give our listeners an idea of that $539 million. What are the main areas that PRT spends on?
So one of the main areas would be wages and salaries. Wages and salaries account for just under $210 million in the budget. Another key area would be pensions and employee benefits, which actually experienced what PRT is calling a 10% reduction in benefit costs. And that's stemming from actuarial reasons regarding the 2008 financial crisis. Now, to combined, wages and benefits equal about 70%, just over 70% of the operating budget. So they are a significant portion.
That's the expenditure side. Scott, can you give our listeners an idea of what PRT is collecting in revenues this year?
So for this year, PRT is forecasting that they will receive $78.5 million in revenues this year. This $78.5 million will primarily come from ridership fees, which they say will be about $50 million. They get money from other areas like advertising, but ridership fees is where they get the largest percentage of their revenue.
Okay, so if we're comparing expenditures of over $500 million and then operating revenues of under $80 million, that leaves a significant deficit, somewhere in the area of $460 million. How does PRT close that gap? Because they are required to pass a balanced budget.
Absolutely. So like you said, this implies a deficit of $460 million. And this shortfall will have to be made up by various different subsidies that PRT will receive from federal, state, and local and other different sources. The majority of the subsidies that they will receive will be coming from the state. However, Allegheny County will match a percentage of those funds that they receive. This year, the subsidies are going to be insufficient to balance the budget, however, so PRT is going to be dipping into its reserves for the first time in many years. It will have to use $78.2 million in what is known as deferred state operating assistance to assist in bridging that budget gap.
Scott, one of the things that's been mentioned in the state budget proposal is getting more money to mass transit agencies across Pennsylvania. Can you give our listeners details on how exactly that is supposed to happen?
So what the state does is it transfers sales tax money from the general fund to what is known as the public transportation trust fund. And then this money is distributed out to transit agencies across the state of Pennsylvania. Now, what the governor has proposed is increasing the percentage of money that is transferred by 1.75%. So this would not be a new tax. It would just be an increase in the money that's already there. What this would do for PRT is it would give them an additional $40 million because of this increased percentage being transferred.
I'm assuming PRT, if they did get this money, if the budget was approved in Harrisburg, that PRT would then go back and amend their budget for the coming year. Scott, one of the major sources of funding that has come in the last couple of years has come from the federal government as a result of coronavirus pandemic aid. Can you give our listeners an idea how much money PRT has received, how much have they spent, and how much of it is left?
PRT received $502 million from the federal government for COVID aid to combat lower ridership they were experiencing as a result of the lockdowns and pandemic of 2020. Of that $502 million, they have spent $463.4 million of it. So that's 92% of it that they have invoiced already as of May 2024. And that leaves $39.1 million still to be used.
You've alluded to how PRT's ridership was affected by COVID. Scott, can you give our listeners an idea? What does the latest ridership data show?
If we compare the latest ridership numbers from 2024 with the numbers that were logged pre-pandemic in 2019, we could see that overall, there has been a 40% decrease and ridership presently compared to pre-pandemic levels. This includes weekday bus average ridership, which experienced a 43% decrease and is where most ridership takes place and therefore where most revenue is gained. And in addition to that, this also includes light rail ridership, which had the highest decrease this year with a 59.6% decrease. It should also be noted that the ridership rebound that was occurring after the pandemic has begun to stagnate. If we look at year over year numbers beginning in 2021, we can see that the slow increase in ridership has begun to fall. Comparing May 2021 to 2022, there was initially a 42.3% increase in ridership. However, comparing 2022 to 2023, there was only a 10% increase in ridership. And looking at the most recent data from 2023, comparing that number to 2024, there has actually been a 4.4% decrease in ridership. So the numbers have begun to stagnate. They are no longer continuing on that upward trajectory.
So ridership is down. The budget is up. There's budget uncertainty with what's happening in Harrisburg, and PRT possibly could get additional money. Sounds like things are not going in the right direction, Scott. What type of recommendations have we made that PRT should adopt?
So the Institute has recommended on multiple occasions in the past that PRT should eliminate various routes that have unsustainably low ridership numbers. There are certain routes that don't get very many people on them, and those could be eliminated to make it more cost effective. They should also shift to smaller vehicles that are more fuel efficient and that are cheaper. All of these would lower their expenses. This would reduce the size of their budget to realign at PRT to be more affordable to what the taxpayers can afford.
Scott, very interesting stuff, and we always encourage our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org. They can read this brief and the previous work that you mentioned. For Scott Cross, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Strategic lawsuits against public participation, also known as SLAP, have been used to silence public comment on a wide range of issues. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania reports the legislature is putting an end to such litigation. She has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
It's almost mid-July and our state budget is late. Frankly, it's hard to see the end of budget negotiations in sight. Taxpayers wait on the edge of their seat to see the price tag associated with the back and forth discussions in Harrisburg. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Since January of 2023, this legislative session has provided endless political drama with a lack of substantive policy wins. While we eagerly await consensus around our Commonwealth's general appropriations, the House and Senate, Democrats and Republicans have found consensus around one thing, free speech protections. We'd be remiss not to celebrate the significant win. House Bill 1466, or Anti-Strategic Lawsuits Against Public Participation, or otherwise known as SLAPP legislation, did the unthinkable this session. It passed both chambers with unanimous support. In a divided government, this is hard to come by. Both parties and chambers put their differences aside on behalf of one important interest group, constituents and taxpayers across all 67 counties. Now, the House will take up this legislation on concurrence, and it heads to Governor Josh Shapiro's desk for a signature. What does this momentous bipartisan legislation do? It protects you, the private Pennsylvania citizen, from legal action in response to protected free speech on public platforms. Strategic lawsuits against public participation lawsuits are complaints filed to intimidate individuals and deter them from speaking out in public forums. The threat of legal action as a means of preventing free speech has been used to silence whistleblowers, journalists, and political protesters. SLAPs target citizens for their free speech on issues of public concern. They are a form of cancel culture, and they weaponize the legal system to penalize protest and silence free speech. Thanks to the General Assembly in Harrisburg, we're one step closer to ensuring this protected right to free speech. But what does this look like in practice? Say you're out to dinner in the city to check out a new restaurant. The service was lackluster. You take to Yelp or Google reviews to provide your feedback. Before anti-SLAPP protections, restaurants could take legal action for defamation. Even worse, SLAPP suits have been used as a measure to prevent victims of assault from speaking out and sharing their stories. SLAPP suits are a means of silencing the voices of smaller parties to protect larger entities. Now, thanks to Harrisburg, your voice and your message is protected from frivolous lawsuits. This is a tremendous policy win and a bright spot on an otherwise long and drawn-out budget process. While we await final appropriations numbers, take a moment to thank your member for unanimously passing free speech protections that guarantee that your voice will be heard. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHLM-AM in Bloomsburg, WKHB-FM in Scottsdale, along with WEJS-AM in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.